Hello, and welcome to the Word Theater Short Story Podcast, your free weekly access to the best short stories read by great actors. My name is Cedaring Fox. I'm Word Theater's founder and artistic director. If you've been enjoying what you've been hearing, my UK producing partner, Kirsty Peart, and I encourage you to visit wordtheater.org and sign up to be a contributing patron or enthusiast member. Become a part of this community of people who understand the value of great writing to connect people across all imaginable social, economic, and political divides. Each of our live, bespoke Word Theater events take an enormous amount of time, care, and person power to put together. It's from those live events that we cull the best of the best for this podcast. Your support will help us continue our work and help us share it with students worldwide on our soon-to-launch Word Theater campus website. Today, we have a special treat. Both Nick Hornby, the author of today's story, Nipple Jesus, and Alfred Molina, who brought the story to life so brilliantly in an unforgettable London performance, will be introducing this offering on our podcast. So let's get to it.
Hi, my name's Nick Hornby. I'm the author of Nipple Jesus, and I'm very happy that Word Theatre uses my story as part of their work. I'm a big fan, and I hope you enjoy it. I wrote this story after, believe it or not, watching a security guard in an art gallery and thinking, oh, that's pretty interesting, because in the end, maybe the security guard has spent longer with the artwork than the original artist might have done, or certainly as long, if it's there for a few weeks and you're there 9 to 5 every day. I was thinking, I wonder what this guard makes of the artwork. And at the time, I was thinking a lot about who knows more about the artist's intentions, the artist or the consumer of the art. And I think it's perfectly possible that an artist doesn't know what they've done, but the reader or viewer or listener does know what they've done. So that idea intrigued me, and that set me off on the story. But I wrote it for charity. I had a week to do something. It came really easily. I found the guy's voice pretty quickly. I suppose the thing that took the most time was inventing the artwork, which is kind of complicated, as you will hear.
My name's Alfred Molina, and it was my great pleasure to read Nick Hornby's story, Nipple Jesus. When I first read the story, I was completely captivated by it because, like a lot of Nick's work, you hear a very specific voice. You hear a voice that is somehow grounded in a very particular time and place. He's got this wonderful capacity to just create the world that the story is taking place in. And it's really, from a performer's point of view, all the info that you need is there. It's there in the text, and you're invited to dive in and give it your own kind of twist. And I was touched by the honesty of this character who perfectly admits that he feels at one point in the story a little out of his depth. He feels as if the art is beyond him. He doesn't understand it. And there's a little bit of resentment in that as well, this sense of feeling. I think at one point even talks about feeling a little stupid, ignorant, dumb, I think is the word he uses at one point. I really responded to that, not because art always makes me feel dumb, but I know that feeling of feeling as if you're a bit out of your depth. But the great trick of the story is the fact that this man, you know, he's working in this gallery. He actually has a much more intimate relationship with the art than any of the customers or any of the people that come to visit and look at it. They come in and they'll look at it and then they'll kind of walk away. He's there every day, and he has this. And as the story develops, you realize that he has a relationship with it. And not only that, he has a relationship with the people who are coming in to look at the art. And so there's this wonderful world. And as a result, the speaker of the story opens up about his own life, the circumstances of his life, how he got to where he is now, standing in this room with this artwork that's quite controversial. It's this growth inside the story, how he grows, he evolves as a human being, he changes. By the end of the story, the speaker is a completely different person, and he has a completely different attitude towards the world, in a sense. He's learned something, he's lost something as well, but he gains something. And I think that's the power of storytelling, in a way. I mean, that's what makes listening to these stories so powerful for an audience and meaningful. And it's why, of course, the work of Word Theatre has always been so extraordinary in that regard. It's providing a moment for listeners to really explore a world through, you know, through the performer, through the person who's reading the story. But it allows the listener to really kind of escape and go into a different life. And I certainly felt that as a reader, as I was reading the story, you know, live to an audience, that I was in that world, that speaker was me for the amount of time I occupied that time and space. That was me. The speaker was me, and I was the speaker. And I think that relationship has an impact on the audience. So it's a different experience from reading. You know, you can sit on your own in a quiet room and read a story and still enjoy it, but having it read and experiencing it through the prism of the performer, I think gives it an extra dimension. And that's why, you know, that's why it's theatre. So, you know, I think this particular story, I remember very fondly because A, it's funny, and it made me laugh when I read it. And I love the fact that when I read it, you know, publicly, as it were, it made other people laugh. So I was pleased that my instincts were, you know, proved correct. It's a fantastic story, Nipple Jesus by Nick Hornby. And I hope everyone enjoys it and all the other stories that are available through Word Theatre.
Sometimes I forget what I look like, if you know what I mean. I was sitting there listening to what this woman was saying about flash photography and how close people were allowed to get and all that. And I was more like a head than a body sort of thing. Because if you're listening to what someone's saying, that's what you are, isn't it? A head. A brain. Not a body. But the point of me here in this place for this job is that I'm 6'2" and 15 stone. Well, it's not just that either, but I look, well, Andy, I suppose. I look like I can take care of myself. But sometimes I forget. When I'm putting the kids to bed or when I'm reading, I don't think, you know, fucking hell, I'm big. Anyway, listening to this woman, I forgot. So when she told me I'd be in the Southern Fried Chicken wing looking after number 49, I never asked her, why me? Why do you need a big bloke in the Southern? I just trotted off like a Burke. I never thought for a moment that I was on some sort of special mission. So I took this job because I promised Lisa I'd give up the night work at the club. It wasn't so much the hours, 10 till 3, Monday to Thursday, 10 till 5, Friday and Saturday, club closed on Sunday. Okay, they fucked the weekends up and I never saw the kids in the morning, but I could pick them up from school, give them their tea. And Lisa didn't have to worry about childcare or anything. She works in a dentist near Arley Street. Decent job, nice boss, good pay, normal hours. And with me being off all day, we could manage. I mean, it wasn't ideal because I never really saw her. By the time the kids were down and we'd had something to eat, it was time for me to put on a monkey suit and go out. But we both sort of knew it was just a phase. And I'd do something else eventually. Fuck knows what. Never really thought about that. She asked me sometimes what I'd do if I had the choice. And I always tell her I'd be Tiger Woods. Millions of dollars a week, afternoons, knocking a golf ball out in places like Spain and Florida. Gorgeous blonde girlfriends, except I never mentioned that bit. And she says, no, seriously. And I say, I am being serious. And she says, no, you've got to be realistic. So I say, well, what's the point of this game then? You're asking me what I'd do if I had the choice, and I tell you, and then you tell me I haven't got the fucking choice. So what am I supposed to say? And she says, but you're too old to be a professional golfer. She's right, I'm 38 now, and you smoke too much. Like, you can't play fucking golf if you smoke. Choose someone at something else then. I say, okay, and I'll be fucking Richard Branson. And she says, well, you can't just start off by being Richard Branson. You have to do something first. And I say, okay, I'll be a bouncer first. And then she gives up. But like I said, it wasn't the hours at the club. I mean, there were a couple of nasty moments recently, you know, incidents with knives. I told her about them because, well, they frightened me. So, of course, she did her nut, and I promised her I'd pack it in. I was lucky because I was only out of work for a fortnight. They wouldn't let me draw the dole because I'd left my previous employment voluntarily. But this geezer had a rusty spike, I said. Well, you should have taken it up with your employer, she said. Like they would have offered me a desk job or given the kid with the rusty spike a written warning. Didn't matter much, though, because I found this one pretty much straight away at an employment bureau. The money's a lot less, but the hours are better. I'm well chuffed. I mean, how hard can it be, I thought, standing in front of a painting? So, we had the induction hour, and then we were led through the gallery to our positions. My painting was off to the side in a room all on its own, and there was a curtain across the entrance, so it was separate from the others. Outside, there was a sign that said, "Warning. This room contains an exhibit of a controversial nature. Please do not enter if you feel you might be offended. Over 18s only." "You're in here," she said. "Watch out." "We're expecting trouble." And then she went off. I went behind the curtain, and there on the far wall was this massive picture of Jesus. I'd say it was probably 10 feet high, 5 or 6 feet wide, something like that. It's kind of like the pictures you've seen before. Eyes closed, the old crown of thorns on his head. That's when he was on the cross, wasn't it? It's a sort of close-up, head and shoulders, so you only see a bit of the cross. But what this picture has that the normal ones don't, well, not to me, they don't anyway, is that you can really tell how much it must have fucking hurt being nailed up. I mean, usually looks like he's just having a kip, but this one... His face is all screwed up in agony. You really wouldn't want to be in his shoes, I tell you. So the first thing I thought was, bloody hell, that's a good picture. Because it makes you think. And I don't often think about things like that. I haven't been anywhere near Jesus since Lisa's sister got married 3 years ago. And the second thought I had was, who the fuck would get offended by that? Because you can go into a church and see the same sort of thing. Not so realistic, maybe, a bit more PG than R, but you know. Basically the same sort of stuff. Moustache and beard, crown of thorns, sad. Because you can't tell how it's done from a distance, see? When you step behind the curtain, you just see the picture and the face. You have to get quite close up to see anything else. So I couldn't understand it. Well, why was there all the fuss? I just thought, religious people, nutters. Because they are, most of them, aren't they? I mean, to each his own and everything, but you wouldn't want to marry one, would you? There's a chair in front of the picture, and I walked towards it to have a sit down. As I got closer, I could see that the picture was made up of hundreds, thousands, maybe millions of little squares. And when I got really close, I could see that these millions of little squares were actually little pictures. And every single little picture had at least one female breast in it. So, you know, those pictures that are made up of dots. Well, that's how this Jesus picture was done, except all the dots are nipples. And that's what the picture's called. Nipple Jesus. There were big breasts and small breasts and big nipples and small nipples and black breasts and white breasts. I could see then that all of the pictures were stills from porn mags and he'd cut them all up and stuck them on. Must have taken him years. So now I understood what the sign was all about. I hated the picture then. 2 minutes ago I'd liked it, now I hated it. And I hated the bloke who'd done it too, wanker. I went to have a look at the name of the artist and it turned out to be a woman. Martha Marsham. How can you be a woman and do that? I could have understood some bloke doing it, some bloke with too many dirty magazines and no girlfriend, but a bird. And I hope that someone did manage to fuck the picture up somehow, and if they did, I said to myself, I wouldn't try and stop them. I might even give them an hand. Because that is offensive, isn't it? A Jesus made out of nipples. That's out of order. One thing I forgot to say before. This was about 6 o'clock in the evening. The exhibition hadn't opened to the public yet. It was opening the next day, but we'd been called in to do the first night party. Anyway, the curtain swished back and I heard this woman's voice going, "Ta-ra!" And then a whole group of people came in. Two younger guys, an older couple and a young woman. Oh, Martha, the older woman said, it's amazing. That'll get them going. So I looked at the group and straight away I guessed it was her mum and dad, her boyfriend and maybe her brother. Martha's about 30. She doesn't really look like I thought she'd look. You know, no dyed hair, no pierced nose, nothing like that. She looks normal, really. She was wearing this long green sort of Indian skirt and what looked like a bloke's pinstripe jacket. And she's got long hair, but she's nice looking, friendly. I want a photo, Martha said, with all of us in it. And then she looked at me. Do you mind? No, I said. I'm Martha, by the way. Dave. Hello, Dave. We shook hands. Then she gave me her camera and I took a picture of them all, standing there grinning and pointing. And I didn't know whether it was right, what with the kind of picture it was. But at that precise moment, I wished that I knew them better, or people like them, because they seemed nice and happy and interesting. I wanted a dad with a grey ponytail instead of that miserable old git who was always going on about the fucking Irish and the fucking blacks. It seemed to me that if I had a dad like that, I wouldn't have ended up going into the army. Worst fucking mistake I ever made. So, when the exhibition opened to the public, nothing much happened at first. Steady stream of people came in and looked, and a couple of them sort of clucked. And what's really clever about the picture is you have to get close up to get offended. Because if you stand at the back of the room, you can't see anything apart from the face of Christ. So it makes the cluckers look like right plonkers, because they have to go and shove their nose up against the painting to see the nipples. So you end up thinking they're perverts. You know, first they have to ignore the sign at the door telling them not to go in. Then they have to walk the length of the room. And then they go, oh, disgusting. So they're really looking out for it. After about half an hour, I got my first nutter. He looked like a nutter. He had chunks missing from his hair, like he'd been eaten by moths. And he wore these huge specs and he kept blinking like some demented owl. And he dressed like a nutter too. Even though it was a hot day, he was wearing a winter coat covered in badges that said things like, don't follow me, I'm lost too. And I'm a Sugar Puffs honey monster. He stank and all. So he wasn't like he was hard to spot. He wasn't an undercover nutter, if you know what I mean. He stared at the picture for a couple of minutes, then he dropped to his knees and started praying. It was all Heavenly Father who gave his only son, Jesus Christ, to us so we might be saved. Please deliver us, blah, blah, blah. And what was weird was you couldn't work out whether he was praying because he was looking at Christ or whether he was praying like they prayed in The Exorcist to get rid of the demons in the room sort of thing. Anyway, after a little while, I got pissed off with it, so I made up a little rule. I'm sorry, sir. We don't allow kneeling in the galleries, I said. I'm praying for your immortal soul, he said. Well, I don't know about that, sir, but we don't allow kneeling. No flash photography, no sandwiches, no kneeling. He stood up and carried on muttering, so I told him praying was out and all. Don't you care, he said. About what, sir? Don't you care about where you're going? And where's that? To hell, man, where serpents will suck on your eyeballs and flames will lick your internal organs for all eternity. No, not really, sir. See, what I meant was, I didn't think I was going to be sent to hell, not for standing in front of a picture anyway. You don't really want to go down that road, the eyeball-sucking road, do you? I mean, it's not very cheerful, is it? I mean, what must it be like to be this geezer? Just as I was wondering what I was going to do with him, a couple of women came in and he scuttled off and things went quiet for a while. But then, just before my lunch break, just as I was starting to think that it was going to be an aggro-free day after all, a bloke walks in wearing a dog collar. Fucking vicar. He was younger than most vicars and trendier too. He had a sort of Hugh Grant floppy haircut and he was wearing jeans. He came into the room and stopped and stared, and I knew, because I knew all the angles and distances by now, that he couldn't see anything from where he was stood. Or rather, he could see Christ, but he couldn't see the nipples. So when he started to walk down towards the picture, I started to walk towards him to block him off. And we stood there almost nose to nose. Why do you want to do that, Your Honour? I asked him. Why don't you just stay where you are? I have to make up my own mind, he said. You know what's there, I said. Everyone knows what's there now. Why'd you have to go and look at it? Stay where you are. I mean, look, it's beautiful. How can anything made out of pornography be beautiful? See, for a moment, I wanted to get into a whole different argument. This isn't porn. I wanted to tell him this is just page-free stuff. Porn is what we used to watch in the army, with dogs and lesbians with strap-ons and all that. But you don't want to be talking to a vicar about sex with dogs, do you? Well, I didn't anyway. He moved to his right to get by me, so I moved to my left, and then we did the same dance the other way around. He was getting annoyed now. And in the end, I had to let him through. Otherwise, I swear it would have gone off, and I'd have been fired for decking him. Happy now, I said, after he'd been there a while. Why did she do it, do you think? I wouldn't know, Your Honour. But she's a very nice young lady. That makes it even sadder, then. Not to me, it doesn't, I thought. If it had been made by a seedy old git whose hobby was looking up women's skirts, well, that's one story. But it's different when you've seen what Martha's like, the sort of person she is. You end up sort of trusting her and trusting what she does and why. I did, anyway. Oh, I can see that wouldn't work for everyone. It wouldn't make a lot of difference to the nutter, for example. I think you've been here long enough now, I said to the vicar. This was completely out of order, of course. But the truth was, I was sick of him. I didn't want him in my room anymore. I beg your pardon. We've been told to watch out for people who stay here more than 5 minutes. You know, perverts and that. Well, that did the trick. Did you know you couldn't smoke in an art gallery? Neither did I. Fucking hell. Just before we closed, the smelly nutter with the badges came back with an egg and tried to throw it at the picture. I saw it coming a mile off, and I grabbed his arm just as he was raising it, and the egg travelled about 2 feet and landed splat on the floor. I marched him out and down the corridor towards the front entrance. I hated that fucker so much, I got carried away a bit. I was twisting his arm and calling him all the names under the sun, and he said he was going to sue me and report me to the police, and he wasn't going to pray for my soul, and he hoped that all the agonies of damnation were heaped upon me. Pillock. But he knew what he was doing. As I was shoving the nutter down the corridor, there was a commotion behind me, shouting and crashing and alarms going off, and then the sound of running. I let the nutter go and went back to my picture, and a couple of the other security guards were in there staring at the floor. Someone had fucked Nipple Jesus over good and proper. They'd taken it off the wall and stomped all over it and then fucked off. There was hardly anything left of it. Felt like crying. Really, I'd let Martha down. I'd been stupid to leave the room, and it was only when I saw the picture smashed up on the floor that I finally realised how much I loved it. But I'll tell you something else, something really weird. Seeing Christ on the floor with his face all smashed in like that, it was really shocking. What they'd done was much more blasphemous than anything Martha had done. I wonder if they thought about that when they were doing it. Whether they'd had any moment of doubt or fear, because I'll tell you, if I was religious and I thought there was a hell where serpents suck your eyeballs out and all that, I wouldn't go around stomping all over Jesus' face. And Jesus is Jesus, isn't he? No matter what you make him out of. And maybe that's one of the things Martha was trying to get at. Christ is where you find him. Some people from the gallery turned up. People I'd seen at the party the night before, but no one who'd ever bothered to speak to me. Then a bit later, Martha came in. I walked towards her because I wanted to hug her, but I worked out just in time that my relationship with her was not the same as her relationship with me, if you see what I mean. I've spent a lot of time over the last couple of days thinking about her because of my job, but she couldn't have spent time thinking about me, could she? Anyway, I didn't hug her. I just went over to her and I said, you know, I'm sorry and all that, but she didn't seem to hear me. She just stared at the picture on the floor and said, "Oh, my God." Which, considering the circumstances, was about right. And when she looked up again, her face was all lit up. She was thrilled to bits, excited, like a kid. I couldn't believe it. "This is perfect," she said. "Brilliant." "How do you mean?" I said, because I didn't get it. "Who did this? Did you see?" So I told her about the smelly nutter with the egg and how I thought he'd done me, wound me up to get me out of the room so his nutter mates could do their stuff, and she loved it. She loved the whole story. "Perfect," she kept saying. "Fantastic." And then, "I can't wait to see the video." And I was like, "What video?" and she pointed out the CCTV camera up in the corner of the room. "That's part of it," she said. "That's part of the exhibition. What I was hoping was that someone would come in and do this on day one, and on day two we could show the film and, I'm going to call it, intolerance." "So that was the idea," I said. "Someone would come in and smash it up?" "Put it this way," she said. "I'd have been stuffed if they hadn't. I'd have been stuck with a portrait of Jesus made out of breasts. And what use is that to anyone? It's Dave, isn't it? Well, Dave, art is about provocation, getting a reaction from people. And I've done it. I'm an artist." When I went home last night, I felt stupid. I felt like I look, if you like, a 6'2", 15-stone bouncer with a shaved head who doesn't know anything about art. I'd spent 2 days thinking something was, you know, beautiful, worth protecting. And all the time it was a piece of shit, stuck on the wall because some bird thought it'd be a laugh if someone smashed it to pieces. So everyone's a prat, aren't they? The nutters are prats for doing what they're supposed to do, and I was a prat for trying to stop them. The only one who isn't a prat is Martha. She's watching us and having a laugh. Well, fuck her. Except maybe she isn't as clever as she thought she was, because the film's showing now, up the corridor, and no one looks at it. It's too long. So most of the time, nothing's happening, and you can't see very much anyway. They cocked up the angle of the camera. So you see the painting coming off the wall, but you don't see anyone jump on it. And it's not beautiful. It's just a CCTV film like you see in a petrol station when you're waiting to get served. And that's what you get instead of the face of Christ in his agony. So who's the prat, eh, Martha? I've got an onion now. Fucking onion. And some other stuff. Beds and tents and shit. Because I'm not in a room by myself anymore. The CCTV film isn't controversial, so they don't need anyone to keep an eye on it. But my chair's by the onion, and it bores me shitless. Because there's nothing to think about onions, is there? So I don't. I just sit here and think about what I'd like to do. Apart from be Tiger Woods or Richard Branson.
We hope you've enjoyed hearing Alfred Molina's performance of Nipple Jesus. You can pick up Nick Hornby's books on our affiliate page at bookshop.org/shop/wordtheater/. And you'll be supporting at least 3 nonprofits. Nipple Jesus can be found in a collection titled Speaking with the Angel, which Nick edited. It also contains other short stories written by his friends. And those proceeds benefit autism research. Other notable works by this most prolific writer of memoir, novel, screenplays, and lyrics include Fever Pitch, High Fidelity, About a Boy, How to Be Good, A Long Way Down, Slam, Juliet Naked, Funny Girl, State of the Union, and Just Like You. And if you didn't already know, Nick has received 2 Academy Award for Best Adapted Screenplay nominations for An Education and Brooklyn. We'd love to hear what you think about today's story. If you're so inclined, please send an email to admin@wordtheater.org. If you're not yet receiving our weekly mailings, please be sure to visit wordtheater.org to sign up. And while you're there, check out our upcoming live and streamed event schedule. 2023 is our 20th anniversary year, and we have lots going on in LA, New York, and London. Celebrations of the short stories of Brian Doyle and Tanif Qureshi are happening in June in LA and London, respectively. We are counting on you, our listeners, to tell your friends about Word Theater and sincerely hope you'll become a supporting member today if you aren't already. You can also sign up to become a free listener. Remember, though, contributing members can easily access filmed versions of our live events for free from the comfort of your own home on your members page. And you have priority seating at our in-person events. For more information, visit wordtheater.org/membership. As always, thanks for tuning into the Word Theater Short Story Podcast. Thank you to LA County Department of Arts and Culture for your ongoing support of this podcast. Thank you, Jonathan Sachs, for composing our theme music. And thanks to our podcast editor, Jason Lee, in Philadelphia. This is Cedaring Fox in Los Angeles. Until next week. signing off.